One of the things that had drawn him to Gabriel was that as lost as Gabriel was in his morass of grief, there were times when he was unnervingly clear-sighted. But Lucien didn't like to have that sharp sight turned on him. He knew what he was, what depths of depravity and cruelty he had plumbed, what ambitions drove him. He prided himself on knowing those things, but that didn't mean he needed anyone else to see them as well. They made their way to a walled manor in the old city, the facade all carved marble and stone. The gate stood slightly ajar, and Lucien slipped inside, past carefully shaped hedges, toward a large red double door with a brass knocker in the shape of an agonized woman's face. As Lucien lifted it, he realized that the hinge of the knocking mechanism was between her teeth, making it appear like a riding bit. Gabriel raised both his brows at Elizabeth. She rolled her eyes. It should have pleased him, the way they truly behaved like siblings, but he resented it. It made him feel that, though he ruled over them, they still kept secrets. "He'd like to see you like that, I'll wager," Lucien said, just to watch Gabriel look embarrassed, to watch Elizabeth snort, just to show them that everything, even their jokes, belonged to him. Death might steal them soon, but until then, they were his. A few moments later, a stoop-shouldered woman came to the door. She was wearing a dark-colored dress, her gray hair pulled back into a braided bun.
"Guten Tag,"
the woman said, and ushered them inside. Following her, they passed through many rooms with painted fresco ceilings depicting battles, the dead and dying looking down at them from gilt-lined recesses. Electric globes hung like fruit from chandeliers, reflected in mirrored panels. They passed red brocade couches and tables with carvings as elaborate as the plaster moldings on the walls. She led them to another courtyard, this one with a single hawthorn at its center. A few of the spider's personal guards, rather pretentiously known as the Corps des Ténèbres, stood around conspicuously in their long robes. Standing beside the tree was a very tall and thin vampire in a charcoal sack coat with a waistcoat and trousers. A watch fob ran from his pocket to underneath his vest, and a red-gold intaglio signet ring, still choked with wax, shone in the glow from the gas lamps. His hooded red eyes regarded them from a saturnine face with a high forehead and a poisoner's mouth. There was no mistaking who he was, despite his ordinary dress and demeanor. He exuded a kind of power that had almost a gravitational pull. Elizabeth was staring at him with a terrible kind of fascination, and Gabriel seemed to be trying not to look anywhere at all.
"Ah, Lucien,"
said the spider, walking toward them, taking his hands out of the pockets of his trousers to scorch the end of his cigarette with a bright gold lighter. His fingers ended in long, yellowed, hooked nails, like the talons of some great bird, and Lucien wondered how many more centuries it would be before he woke up with hands like that.
"So good of you to come."
The servant woman, with a worshipful glance toward her master, withdrew.
"I am ever yours to command," said Lucien with a short bow.
He hated the antiquated vampires, hated their silly palaces and their airs, and the way they expected one to bow and scrape. Here, among all the trappings of modern Vienna, one might be tempted to think the time of monarchs was past. But whatever revolutions happened elsewhere in the world, none was likely to occur among the shadowy governance of vampires. The spider snorted.
"You're an apple farmer's son from a little town in Normandy, no matter how much you play at consequence."
Oh, and had he mentioned how much he hated their ridiculous obsession with ancestry, as though it mattered what blood ran through one's veins when all of it was stolen? He bit his tongue and said nothing. The spider turned to Gabriel, pointing at him with one clawed nail, making him flinch.
"At first glance, they do not seem so unworthy for you to have hidden them from me, Lucien. Why did you not present them as you should have? Is there some reason I would have forbidden you from turning them?"
only that one is a psychopath and the other has what Freud would call a powerful death urge. But which one is which?
I am impulsive, Lucian said, readying himself to make a speech of contrition. But I meant no harm. I taught them how to hunt and kill, to leave little trace of their passing through the world. They have done nothing wrong save being born, and in that, too, they are innocent. I am their maker. That crime is mine.
Yes, the spider said. Lucian would have said more, but that one word halted him. He'd never thought he would receive any real punishment. He glanced surreptitiously toward the two corps de ténèbres in plain sight and reconsidered Elizabeth's plan. No, still better to run if it came to that.
Lucian Moreau, I accept your confession. Our power comes from our small numbers, from our secrecy, from our adherence to what few rules we have. Your death is a just one, for it will warn off others like you who are equally impulsive.
The ancient vampire set his clawed hand lightly against Lucian's shoulder. Lucian turned and looked into the spider's face, puzzled for a moment. But then a shudder went through him, because he saw, in that moment, that all of the spider's fine clothes and civilized words were just a mask. Beneath it was something ancient and savage, something that feared nothing and only hungered. Lucian felt his knees buckle as though some unseen force bore down on him. He went to the floor with a groan. Gavriel gasped.
No!
Elizabeth shrieked, throwing herself down beside Lucian in a sea of skirts and crawling toward the spider.
No! Please spare him! He is our father, our brother, our master. He is the one who gave us life eternal, please!
The spider held up a hand and she subsided. For the first time in 100 years, Lucian was truly afraid.
Let one of you take his place, then. Will you?
For a long moment, Lucian's progeny were silent. He closed his eyes, cursing them both in his thoughts.
It is right and good, said the spider, for a parent to die before his child. You are right to leave him to his fate.
No, Gavriel said.
Wait. I will take his place. Get up, Lucian.
Lucian looked at Gavriel, black curls spilling over his cheeks, and thanked whatever wisdom had made him turn a man who availed himself of every single opportunity to throw his life away. Lucian hoped he wouldn't have to watch the execution.
You're certain,
said the spider, his greedy gaze boring into the boy, stripping him raw. Gavriel nodded quickly, clearly steeling himself. He began to kneel. The spider shook his head, smiling.
You may remain standing. You're loyal and courageous. Two qualities not often found among our kind. What a waste to cut down such a rare creature. No, my sentence is that you will hunt for me. You will hunt others like us. You will be one of my thorns, and your term of service will be your entire illicitly born life.
I'm not to die?
Gavriel asked, clearly puzzled. He looked toward Lucian, but Lucian was powerless to speak, possessiveness lighting through him like a flame. Gavriel was his, made from his blood, alive by his whim, his to jeer at or adore or destroy. And if Gavriel wasn't to be his, then Lucian would rather he was raised from the earth.
No.
The spider took a long drag on his cigarette, looking like a very modern sort of monster, despite his years. Despite what Lucian had seen in his face.
Oh, no. You're to give me the gift of all that loyalty.
What Lucian hated the most about ancient vampires, he decided, was the way they had studied cruelty for so long to know just how to hurt you best. It won't always be this way, Lucian vowed. And it wasn't. Chapter 29. While I thought that I was learning how to live, I have been learning how to die. Leonardo da Vinci. Midnight bore Tana to the ground. Her weight and the suddenness of the strike, enough to knock Tana off balance. She fell amid the trash cans, the sour stink of garbage all around her. Tana looked up at the sky for an odd, lucid moment, seeing the stars spread out like a carpet over them. Then she kicked Midnight in the stomach. The vampire girl let go of Tana's throat in surprise, and Tana scuttled back. But before she could get to her feet, Midnight threw herself against her, grasping her arms and sitting on her legs. Pinned, Tana could only try to reach for the wooden shaft of a rake that seemed just beyond her grasp. "What is wrong with you?" Tana demanded, fingers wiggling through the dirt. "I helped you." "Helped me? I didn't need you and your watching, judging eyes. You'll try to take Winter away from me again. Leave him in the sun to bake and rot. He's mine. I get to bury him the way I want." Tana didn't know if this manic energy and violence had always been in her, or if being turned had made her this way. But right then, Midnight sounded like a little girl who'd forgotten to feed her gerbil, and then, finding it dead, cared more about decorating its shoebox coffin than about what she'd done. "And now you're trying to take away Aiden, too. It's not fair." Tana finally caught hold of the rake and brought it down as hard as she could. It smacked Midnight in the shoulder, which wasn't exactly what Tana intended, but it made Midnight recoil, snarling. Tana hit her again. This time the wood struck her head. Midnight grabbed it and snapped it in two, throwing the jagged ends among the trash. In that moment, Tana pushed free and started to run toward the house, but Midnight caught her, dragging her back through the dirt. Tana tried to flip over, pushing against the ground. She rose up just as Midnight sunk her teeth into Tana's neck. Pain seared along Tana's nerves. It hurt. It really hurt. It was like her mother ripping open her arm all over again. But as she cried out, a kind of icy numbness began to spread through her veins. And after that, a velvety, consuming pleasure. It ate away at the edges of her thoughts, pressing on her to fall deeper into its darkness. She still felt Midnight's mouth moving against her neck, still felt the sting of teeth and the pull of her blood being drawn from her, but all those feelings were going more and more indistinct. Instead, it was as though she were being devoured by cold flame, and each lick of that black fire made her shudder with rapturous agony. She kicked her feet and scrabbled with the nails of her fingers, scratching Midnight's arms futilely. The vampire held Tana firmly, pulling her closer. Her lion's purse was wedged between her waist and the ground, but that small discomfort barely registered. It was so hard to push through the feelings and think. Everything was getting murkier. The shadows were closing in. When she opened her eyes, all she saw was the blurry blue of Midnight's hair. "Think," she told herself muzzily. "Think." She forced her hand to close on the metal shell of the purse and push at the lock, letting her money, the marker, and everything else spill out onto the dirt. She felt among the fallen things, looking for something, but she no longer remembered what she had been searching for. A wave of blissful weakness washed over her. She was so tired, and her ears were full of a distant thudding that seemed to slow, like a drumbeat in time to music about to end. Then her fingers closed on an object she recognized. The rose water she'd taken from one of the purses at Lance's party. Pulling off the stoppered top clumsily, she splashed the contents in Midnight's face. The vampire screamed. Tana plunged back into reality. She was lying in the dirt, about to die. Panic hit her hard and she scrambled to stand, even though she swayed unsteadily on her feet. She grabbed her what she could find on the ground, holding her pathetic weapon up as she knocked into trash cans and then the wall. Midnight's face was red along one side, as if she'd been scalded. Drawing back her lips over her teeth, she hissed like a cat and rushed at Tana. Tana had a sudden, vivid memory of her teacher in art class, explaining how understanding anatomy was important to life drawing. He'd borrowed a skeleton from the biology room and started talking about ulnas and tibias when Marcus Yates, the school's most reliable weed dealer, called out something about stabbing someone so you hit them right in the heart. "Up under the fifth rib," he'd said. She didn't have time to count, but she remembered those words as she brought up the stick she'd grabbed, the broken piece of rake, and slammed it into Midnight's side, thrusting it up toward her heart. Midnight screamed again, thrashing as Tana pushed the weapon in deeper, using it like a spear. Then, abruptly, Midnight went limp. Her eyes were closed, but her mouth hung open, a terrible grimace distorting her features. Tana slumped back, wiping her bloody hand on her dress, too stunned to quite process what had happened. She sat in the dirt, shaking with horror and cold. "Get up, Tana," she told herself. "Get up and get out of here. You've got the marker. Go." Quickly, without looking at Midnight's body, Tana stuffed her things back into her purse and stood, leaning against the side of Lucien Moreau's house. Light streamed out of the tinted glass window, shockingly bright. It seemed to smear in her vision. "Don't think about it. Go. Just keep going slowly until you make it to the gate. You can sleep in your car. Go." She took 4 stumbling steps before she realized the problem with her plan. Midnight had bitten her. She was infected. And this time it wouldn't be something her body could fight off. There would be no resisting, no control. She'd be like Aiden was, or worse. Tana fell to her knees, all her thoughts a riot of denial. Then the door opened and 2 vampires walked down the steps. They were dressed in ratty black jeans and dark jackets. One of them was smoking a cigarette, although he tossed it to one side when he saw her. "Get up," he said. She started to laugh, but it came out more like choking. "I can't." "You murdered a vampire," he told her, pointing to a camera high up on the side of the house. "Lucien sees everything that goes on here, and he doesn't like humans attacking his guests." "Well, good then," Tana mumbled, still grinning stupidly. "Because that didn't happen." Lucien, being a vampire, might not see it that way, but it was hard to care much when everything hurt. As the guards took her, she knew she ought to scream or beg, kick or cry, but she had no more fight left. She let herself be lifted and carried back to the party. They took her through an entrance she hadn't seen before into a small hexagonal-shaped room, which was empty, except for the built-in bookshelves that covered the walls, and for a settee where they dumped her. Tana wasn't sure how long she sat there before Lucien Moreau came in. He'd changed his clothes and was now dressed in a blue shirt and loose gray trousers, looking relaxed as ever. Up close, though, Tana noticed a rank smell clung to him like spoiled meat. Crouching down, he seized her jaw between 3 of his fingers and turned her face one way and then another. He smiled then, baring his fangs. She felt the iron strength in his hand and the terrible indifference of his gaze, as though she were an animal he was considering the best way to butcher. "You killed a vampire at my party," Lucien told her. He shook his head as though she was in a great deal of trouble and a very naughty girl. "So did you," said Tana. If she was going to die, she might as well die sarcastic. She'd seen a lot of old movies, and that was definitely the way to go out. As if she were Humphrey Bogart or Clark Gable, not giving a damn. She wanted to make Pauline and Pearl and even her father proud when they watched the feed. If she could be a little bit funny before, Maybe the dying part would be less horrible to see. A corner of his mouth lifted, as if maybe he appreciated a little sass from his prey. It's my party. She thought of the walls of Lance's farmhouse, streaked with blood. She thought of pink-haired Imogen, with her pale, staring eyes. It's all your fault, she said muzzily. You. You're the reason. He gave her an odd look. I like it when you humans don't bother being sorry, but it's a little much to say that it was my fault. So what happens to me now? She remembered the infected girls and boys shackled to the parlor walls, fed on by vampires. Maybe she'd become one of those. Or maybe he'd just kill her. Maybe she could try to kill him right back, if only she could make herself stand up. Lucian looked at her, as though he was weighing that very question. Then he slid his hand down from her jaw to her throat, tipping her head with cool precision. Tana took a deep breath, waiting for him to strike, fumbling in the cushions for any weapon. It was almost over, she told herself. Then his fingers flicked her garnet necklace and his expression changed. That's pretty against your throat. Where did you get it? She didn't hesitate. Gavriel. His eyes widened fractionally, studying her as though he'd never bothered to really look at her before. Lucian stood and went out, slamming the door behind him. Fear washed over her, but she was so tired and dizzy from blood loss that she couldn't even hold on to it. She stood up and then slid to the floor. She thought of Gavriel as he'd been earlier that night, with his curved daggers and his mad song. She wondered if he would come and sing to her. Tana fell into an uneasy doze, curled up on the carpet. She regained consciousness lying on cold stone, something soft piled under her head. Get up, Valentina was saying, shaking her shoulder. Tana, you've got to get up. She tried to open her eyes, but they felt as though they were glued together and wouldn't move. Her limbs felt so heavy that she thought she might sink right through the floor. She's lost too much blood, said an unfamiliar voice. A girl's. It echoed in the room. It's all over her. There's no way she's going to make it. I don't think that's her blood, said a boy. Tana reached out with her fingers and touched steel bars, chilly against her skin. She wasn't sure where she could be. The room smelled damp, with the vaguely mineral smell of basements. Open your eyes, she told herself, but she couldn't. Somebody, Valentina shouted. She's really sick. Somebody, please. When she woke again, she was lying in a massive bed in a dimly lit room. Her arm was shackled to the brass headboard, and there was a long IV running from her arm to a bag of clear fluid that hung from a picture hook on the wall, over a bedside table. Someone had taken the painting down and leaned its gilded frame against a chair. She still hurt, pretty much all over.
When you're in danger, everything becomes clear, doesn't it? Gavriel said softly, in a tone that made her shiver.
He was sitting on her non-IV side, in a leather chair beside a makeup table, his face in shadows.
Everything else falls away. Danger is a terrible addiction. But that's what I like. The clarity of thought it provides. How about you?
And even though she'd known him for less than a week, and plenty of what she did know of him was horrendous, at the sight of him, she let out her breath all at once. She let herself fall back on the bed, boneless with relief. She knew she shouldn't feel that way about a monster, but right then, she wanted nothing more than a monster of her very own.
What's happening to me? She finally asked, then rattled her arm, indicating the line of tubing. Had she dreamed Valentina's voice?
Would that it were the waters fleety dripping into your veins.
He leaned forward, so that the dim light of the tinted window showed the curve of his mouth and the way his dark lashes brushed his cheeks when he lowered his eyes. He looked very young and very old at once. Then a corner of his red mouth lifted in a wry smile.
But alas, the answer is merely that you lost a lot of blood and were giving you saline.
Like the stuff people with contacts put in their eyes? She asked, before realizing he probably had no idea what she was talking about. He picked up her purse from where it rested beside her and shook it gently.
In case you were concerned, all just as you left it.
She nodded. Thanks. Although I guess whether I'll ever get to use that marker is pretty up in the air right now.
You should have let me eat her in that parking lot,
Gavriel said, raising his eyebrows. That startled a laugh out of Tana. It wasn't just that what he'd said was funny. It was the waggish way he'd said it, as if he expected her to get the joke. Expected her to get that he was joking. It made her feel less bizarre about how comfortable she felt around him, if he felt even a little bit the same way.
It's not so bad, Gavriel said,
standing and coming to sit at the end of the bed. The amusement had gone from his face as he watched his own hand smooth over her bedclothes.
You're younger than I was when I turned, and more adaptable than I remember myself to have been. You'll be marvelous.
For a moment, she didn't understand what he was saying, and then she realized, of course, he must know she was infected. Lucian had seen the fight she'd had with Midnight, and Gavriel must have, too, given what he'd said a moment ago. He certainly could see the bite marks on her throat. I'm not going to be a vampire, she said, trying to make her voice sound more certain than she was. She remembered the sound of her mother shouting up from the basement, calling for blood, being willing to sink her teeth into her own daughter's arm. She remembered Aiden lunging at her in the guest room of Lance's party when she'd untied his gag. What would Tana do once the infection wormed deep into her brain, so that there was nothing but the need for blood and the willingness to do anything to get it? Once she was entirely cold, cold through and through, then she would scream and threaten and beg for blood. Her eyes started to water and she blinked back the tears. She hadn't cried since the gas station, and she wasn't going to cry now.
Tana,
Gavriel said helplessly.
Whose necklace did you give me?
She asked, wiping her eyes with her free hand.
Lucian recognized it. It belonged to my sister once,
he said, so quietly that she was sure there was more to the story than that. Then he smiled.
But Katia is long dead, and there's no point in my keeping it when I hardly ever wear it.
Hardly ever, huh? Tana said. I bet garnets look good on you. He smiled distractedly, seeming to think of another time. Whatever it was, it made his features smooth out and his whole face look softer and very young.
She had it on in Paris when she met Lucien and Elizabeth. We pretended to drink champagne with her at a mezzo-soprano salon in Montparnasse. I imagine Lucien remembers that necklace because he stared at my sister's throat the entire evening.
The casual way he said it, with genuine fondness, made her believe that Lucian, and probably Elizabeth, had truly been his friend then. Tana thought about how much fun it must have been, once upon a time, to be vampires and have forever stretching out in front of you. An endless carnival of nights. They must have felt as almighty as angels, looking down on the world from their windows, choosing to spare each passerby. She liked thinking of it, even as her body felt heavy with exhaustion. I heard all that stuff Lucian told you, Tana said, forcing her mind back to the present. You can't really believe him, can you? I mean, you've got to be somewhat skeptical, right?
Are you asking if I've guessed that Lucian killed Elizabeth because he didn't want her to tell me something. In fact, I have. He stood and came closer, brushed the hair back from her face. But Lucian and I will sort out our own grudges after the spider's arrival, and I will tell you all my stories soon. No more deceptions. But now night is coming for you. We have tomorrow, and tomorrow, and tomorrow. Tana scrambled to sit up, the restraint on her wrist holding her to the headboard. No! Later I won't be myself. Oh, you will be, he told her softly, walking to the door. We labor under so many illusions about ourselves, until we're stripped bare. Being infected, being a vampire, it's always you. Maybe it's more you than ever before. You distilled. You boiled down like a sauce. But it's you as you always were, deep down inside. She stopped struggling, horrified by the memory of Midnight's face transformed by rage and those teeth sinking into her throat. Horrified by the memory of her mother's voice in the dark. Horrified by the thought that she might be the same or worse, and that it would be her, truly her, doing those things. But Gabriel must know. He'd been human. He'd been infected. He'd been turned. Besides, she'd killed Midnight. She'd already done those things. Already learned she could. Before you go, just tell me one thing, Tana said. Tell me why you've been so nice to me. I know you're the reason Lucian let me live. He wasn't planning on giving me any saline drip or putting me in some fancy bed before I said your name. And I'm not anybody special. I'm not saying that I'm not smart or a perfectly nice person or anything, but I'm not. He'd been halfway across the room when she started speaking, and he'd frozen. His face turned away from her. Then he moved to the footboard of the bed, his hands gripping the brass railing, his face a mask. Finally, he cut her off. Tana, in all my long life, though there were many times I prayed for it, no one has ever saved me. No one but you. He was watching her with an expression so intense that she had to look away from it. She could think of no reply. She felt a little bit stupid that she'd asked and a little bit embarrassed by his answer. Maybe it would be better if he left and came back. Maybe if she was less sick and less tired, she would feel less vulnerable. Gabriel walked to her side of the bed. Tana flinched at his approach, suddenly nervous. He seemed like a stranger again. His eyes looked black instead of red in the dim light of the room, and she thought of what he must have been like under gas lamps in a city across the sea. He took her free hand and lifted it to his mouth, kissing the back as though he were that courtly gentleman again. Sleep, Tana, he said, placing her hand back on her stomach, his fingers only a little cooler now than hers. Sleep while you can. He looked as though he wanted to say something else, but then rose. He walked to the door, and this time she didn't stop him. She heard a lock turn on the other side of the wall. Great, she thought. Perfect. Shackled to a bed in a locked room. But at least a locked door might keep out everything else in Lucian Moreau's house. And at least if she was shut in here, no matter how bad the infection got, she wouldn't be able to hurt anyone. She flopped back with a groan, trying to make her mind blank. Soon she would be sick, and then what? She'd scream and cry and beg, and either Lucian would kill her out of annoyance, or Gabriel would give her blood. It took 88 days to sweat the venom out. No one was going to protect her from herself during that time. If she wanted to avoid becoming a vampire, she had to get out of here and find some place to hole up. And to do that, she needed to be less tired and sore. Gabriel was right. She needed to sleep, heal,
and let the saline work. She couldn't. Every time she closed her eyes, she thought she could feel the chill of infection creep across her skin. She couldn't stop wondering if she was already going cold. Couldn't stop worrying that when she woke up, she'd already be too crazy to make any plans that didn't involve attacking the first person who came through the door. And when she managed to put that thought out of her head, she thought of Gabriel. It seemed impossible to believe that he'd pressed her back against a wall and kissed her, his body straining against hers, her hands tangled in his hair, his expression that of a man thoroughly lost. To distract herself, Tana studied the room she'd been imprisoned in. There were too many things in it for it to be a guest room. The side tables were stacked with books and a glass goblet with a ring of some dark liquid dried at the base. There was a makeup table of burled wood littered with open jars and brushes. Long, shimmering golden earrings set with pieces of jade had been thrown haphazardly into an open drawer, along with a large amulet. The door to the closet was partially open, and the skirt of a black dress was visible. Turning her head, Tana tried to get a better look at the painting that had been set on the floor so that her sailing bag could hang in its place. If she strained against the cuff, she could just make out the shape of a beautiful saint pierced through with arrows that still stuck from his sides. Blood ran down his pale body, and his face was turned up toward the sky in a pose of ecstatic suffering. So, a woman's room and probably a vampire's. Someone who wasn't using it and wasn't going to use it. Elizabeth. This had to be Elizabeth's room. Elizabeth's painting and jewels and dresses. Lucian had let Tana be chained up in the bedroom of the vampire he'd loved and also murdered. It was a creepy discovery, made creepier by the feeling that she'd somehow replaced Elizabeth. As though one girl chained to a bed was much the same as another girl sleeping in one. And however she felt around Gabriel, she would be stupid, no matter what he said or she felt, to count on his kindness. He was crazy and changeable, not to mention bloodthirsty. Climbing up onto her knees and ignoring the rush of lightheadedness, she pulled on the cuff, squeezing her thumb in tight against her palm to see if she could pull through the metal loop. She pushed with the other hand, hoping that whoever had locked it around her wrist had done so carelessly. No luck. She was still held tight. Regrouping, she felt a long chain around the bracelet of the cuff with her free hand, checking to make sure there was no mechanism to take them off, the way there were on joke cuffs. Nothing. She thought that idea was a long shot, but she figured she'd have felt pretty stupid if there had been one and she hadn't at least tried. Then she considered the brass headboard. Now that she was sitting up, she might be able to slide off the bed and land on her feet, so long as she shoved the bedside table over a bit. And from there, she could use her free hand to twist the ball off one pole and slide the cuff from the bed without bothering to remove it. At least she could try. The night table slid over easily, only a few books slipping to the floor. Then her bare feet followed. She took a moment to catch her balance, then, bracing herself, threw her weight against the brass ball, attempting to unscrew it. It came off with a whine of metal grinding against metal. Then, hopping up onto the frame of the bed, Tana was able to lift the other cuff off the end of the tall brass pole. She was still caught by the plastic tubing that connected her IV to the bag on the wall. Looking it over, she then decided the only thing she knew how to do was unscrew the piece that connected the tube to the crook of her arm. As soon as she did, it began to leak saline onto the bed, dripping over the wooden planks of the floor. Staggering to the lion-headed purse, she opened it and found the marker. Then, reaching for the garnet locket around her neck, she jammed the quarter-size metal inside, pressing the locket closed around it. At least she wouldn't lose it again. As she crouched down over her bag, she saw a polished wooden box under the bed. Pulling it toward her, she realized there was no lid. The box was lined in blue velvet and held a crossbow and several daggers with wooden blades, Basically, stakes. Stakes with hilts. The smell of rose oil floated up from them. Elizabeth must not have trusted any of the other vampires she lived with any more than they deserved. It was tempting to take one out, but if she snuck around with one of those in her hand, she was unlikely to be able to explain it. Tana pushed herself to her feet. She tried not to slip in the widening puddle as she walked over to the door. Dizziness flooded her, and she looked down to see that her new white dress was covered in dirt and dried blood. Her sandals were gone. It was almost funny, the way she couldn't wear a single outfit without ruining it. It was almost funny, but not quite. Looking at the knob in the lock, Tana realized with surprise that although Gabriel had turned a key on the outside, the locking mechanism was on the inside. All she had to do was turn the bolt and the door opened. Which made sense, since this had been Elizabeth's room. She might have locked herself in at night, but no one would have imprisoned her here. Which meant that Gabriel never meant to imprison Tana. If anything, the lock was to keep other things out. With that thought in mind, she stepped into the hallway. Dimmed daylight streamed in through the heavily tinted windows. It looked like the same glass at the top of the Eternal Ball, the kind that filtered light safely for vampires. The party had mostly died down, although there were some humans left, sleeping on the steps or against a bench. Tana walked past them, and the few who were awake didn't even blink at the sight of her gore-smeared clothes. Her stomach lurched. She could smell rich, dark blood pumping under human skin, could feel the heat rising off people as she passed. She drew in a breath and shuddered with hunger. Chapter 30. On this side of the grave, we are exiles. On that, citizens. Henry Ward Beecher. Once upon a time, there was a little girl, and she told a lie to her friend's brother so that her friend's brother drove her to the bus station. She brought with her a bottle of orange soda, $50, half in change, sparkly slippers, and her cell phone. He thought he was helping. So did she. Chapter 31. For I know that death is a guest divine. Who shall drink my blood as I drink this wine? William Winter. Walking through Lucien Moreau's house reminded Tana unnervingly of the morning after Lance's party. Like then, she was the only one moving. Music was still playing somewhere, distant as the television had been that day. And looking at all of the sleeping bodies brought to mind the corpses of the kids from her school arranged on the floor. But these kids were just passed out, and now she was the monster walking among them. She found her way through the ballroom with the high glass ceiling, where food was still lying out on a table, rotting in shadowed sunlight. The remains of cakes and half a tart covered with glistening fruit, sliced cuts of meat and spiky baguettes, half-peeled oranges buzzing with flies, overturned bowls of sugared rose petals. Although she had not eaten for many hours, the sight of it made her feel sick. As she leaned against the wall, a shiver rolled through her, ice crystallizing inside her. Was Valentina still here? She remembered walking to Valentina's voice, remembered cold concrete beneath her and steel against her fingertips. A basement, she'd thought. But was that a real memory? Tana kept moving, stumbling through rooms. There were parlors and toilets, a kitchen with gleaming appliances and a butler's pantry full of old-fashioned weapons. Then she found an alcove with a door that led to a staircase spiraling downward. The stone steps were cold on her bare feet. She felt that chill rising up through her legs to freeze her belly, to rime her throat with a frost that would never melt. She found herself in a vast basement. Wooden racks held bottle after bottle of wine on one wall. On the other were 12 cells. They were large and they smelled of sweat and heat and blood. In them were boys and girls, all of them lovely and none older than 20. Most were sleeping on the stone floor, wrapped in blankets, their heads pillowed on rolled-up clothes or backpacks. Some, isolated from the others, wore muzzles. A few had saline drips like the one hanging from a nail in Elizabeth's room, two flights of stairs up. Three girls were awake, one weeping quietly near a makeshift toilet, while another two played dice. Tana thought of the cold girls and boys who had been chained to the walls the night before. At first, when she'd seen the kids in the cages, she'd thought they were a fresh batch and the others were dead. But now, she realized Lucian must keep them here for weeks, months, however long he could. Any blood supply was too precious to waste. The infected must be the muzzled ones, drugged into sleeping away each day in restless, red-soaked dreams. It took a moment to realize that one of the sleeping girls was Valentina. Tana walked closer. She could almost see the warmth radiating off all of them, shimmering above them the way heat bends the light above a hot stretch of road. The two girls playing dice seemed to have come from the party and still wore their party frocks, but their hair was dull and their eyes were sunken. Both had shunts in their arms, the skin around them dark with bruising. One had a sore nearby, yellow at the center with an outer circle of green and black scabbing. To Tana in that moment, though, they all seemed heart-stoppingly beautiful. The scent of their blood welled up from underneath their skin, making her veins sing with need. The weeping girl looked up and saw Tana. Her eyes went wide, and she sniffled noisily, wiping her nose on her sleeve. Then she stood and came to the edge of the bars. Up close, Tana could see her long black hair and dark skin.
"How did you get away from him?" the girl asked. "He's got cameras everywhere."
Tana crossed the room without really deciding to, drawn to the girl. She told herself that she only wanted to free Valentina. She told herself that she would never hurt any of them, while her mind supplied her with images of biting, ripping, rending.
"I was here?"
she asked, a little dazed. The girl nodded, wiping her wet cheeks.
"You were so pale, and there was so much blood on your dress that we thought you were done for. Then one of the vampires came for you, and we were sure you were done for."
Tana wondered which one of them it had been. Had Gabriel been down here? "Did something happen? You're crying."
"I'm scared," the girl snapped. "Most of them want to be here, but not me. He recruits kids off the street, offers them food and a place to sleep, says they can earn eternal life. My friend Violet went with him a month ago, and I haven't seen her since. I came to the party to see if there was something on his recordings about what happened to her, but then they caught me in the recording room."
Which made it seem as if Lucian didn't usually grab people from his parties, as if he had taken Valentina for a reason, because she'd come in with Tana, who'd murdered a vampire, because she'd been somewhere she wasn't supposed to be, like this girl. Tana looked up into the eye of the lens. Then she turned her back to it, leaning toward the bars. "Is there a key?" she mouthed. "How can I get you both out?" The dark-haired girl came closer. One of her cheeks was smudged with dirt. She waved Tana in, whispering so she couldn't be heard on the recording.
"There's two keys," she said, her breath warm on Tana's icy cheek. "One that fits in the lock on the cage, and another one that unlocks the hinges so the door swings. But you're not going to find them in time."
It would be such a little thing to grab the girl's wrist and pull it through the bars of the cage, to sink her dull teeth into yielding flesh. Tana's fingers gripped the chilled metal, winding around it as if it were what she desired. "Right," Tana said, forcing herself to focus. "Two locks, two keys, 8 people locked in a cage. 88 days of hunger, all of them worse than this. I'll be back. I'll find some way to get you out, I promise." Tell Valentina that I promise. At the sound of her name, Valentina stirred, turning in sleep. Tana wasn't sure what she'd think if she woke, if she'd be angry to find Tana on one side of the cage and herself on the other. I don't know who has them, the dark-haired girl whispered. Other than Elizabeth. She comes down here sometimes and just looks at us. It's creepy. Tana made herself back away from the cage and the girl, hoping that her expression wasn't too like Elizabeth's. Creepy. Hungry. I hate to say this, the dark-haired girl told her softly, but you should get out of here while you can. Don't worry about me, Tana said, hoping that would be answer enough. She thought about going up to Elizabeth's room and searching it for the two keys, but maybe she didn't need them. Maybe there were bolt cutters, or maybe there was an axe sharp and sure enough to cut right through the lock. She walked around the basement, finding a door she couldn't open, and then another that led to a closet. Inside were an assortment of moth-eaten blankets, a broken chair, and a few tools. She bent down to take a closer look when someone grabbed her by the arm. She had time to lunge for the handle of a long screwdriver before she was hauled to her feet. A vampire stood in front of her, his red eyes dim in the gloom. He had on a tuxedo shirt, although the jacket was missing and the bow tie hung loose around his neck, just wrinkled cloth. But even though he was dead, she could smell the blood inside him, magical and strange. She thought of midnight, out on the dark lawn. Tana, is that you?
How did you get down here?
His nose wrinkled, and he took another look at her, at her neck.
You're infected. You're not supposed to...
Tana didn't wait for him to finish, and she didn't try to answer. She slammed the screwdriver deep into his chest with all the force she could muster, hoping against hope that she'd be lucky enough to strike his heart. The ferocity of her attack drove him back against the wall. She ripped free the screwdriver, feeling it drag against the bones of his ribs, and then stabbed him with it again. This time she stabbed him straight through the throat. He made a choked noise. His hands scrabbled to pull her to him, jaw working to bite the air, the light already going out of his eyes. She had him. She brought down the screwdriver like it was a dagger, over and over, until he stopped moving, until his head was at an odd angle, hanging from flesh, the bones of his neck shattered. Blood bubbled up, the smell of it entrancing her, even through her panic. She was already operating on instinct, so she barely thought before she brought her head down, bending over him as if to pray. She knelt and lapped at the pool of red collecting in what was left of the hollow of his throat. Tiny hairs tickled her nose as she bit down. His blood was chill and thick, sliding down her throat like honey, the taste sparking on her tongue as though she were gulping light. Her skin felt as if it had caught fire. She'd turned into lit paper, already blistering and about to blaze up into black smoke and ash. His blood was shady afternoons, and metal filings running, thrumming through the fat roots of veins to drip syrup slow, spurting across mouth, teeth, chin. She licked his skin, bit him, ripped with her blunt teeth, and licked again. Time passed as if in a dream, moments blurring together. When she came back to herself, the first sound she heard was a gasp from behind her. She turned toward the cage. The people within, Valentina, the dark-haired girl, and most of the others, were huddled together on the far side. Valentina took a half-step toward her and then shrank back again, her courage failing. Tana reached up a sticky hand to touch her face. It was coated with blood, making a half-mask. She must look awful. An animal girl. But then Valentina did come forward, walking to the bars, widening her eyes and jerking her chin. It was a subtle but clear signal. Look over there, it said. Tana turned toward the shadows and saw the shine of eyes. She stumbled back, reaching again for the slippery handle of the screwdriver before she saw it was Gabriel. He was sitting on the floor, legs crossed. She had no idea how long he'd been sitting there, but at her astonished look, he raised both eyebrows. An amused smile pulled at his lips.
I'm a very bad host, forcing you to throw together supper for yourself, he said finally.
He stood and stuck out a hand, as if to help her to her feet, as if she were some fancy lady who'd fallen from a coach into a mud puddle. One of her hands reached for the guard's keys, the other reached up for Gabriel, letting him pull her to her feet. Her fingers were wet with blood, but he didn't seem to notice. She almost laughed, but she couldn't quite. She didn't feel enough like herself to trust that she wouldn't start sobbing instead.
Were you looking for me? She asked, to fill the silence.
I was watching the screens in one of Lucian's video rooms. So many exits and entrances and a citadel in need of storming. And then you.
She couldn't put her finger on what was different in his voice, but for the first time she thought that he was being deliberately obscure. His face was placid, though, showing nothing.
Tana,
Valentina whispered, her fingers reaching out through the bars to point.
He's...
Looking up, Tana saw Lucian Moreau coming down the stairs. He was dressed all in cream, his jacket the color of ivory. Silver buttons ran over the front and down the cuffs. His shoes came to sharp points. He looked ageless, ancient and youthful in the same moment. His skin was pale, but his mouth was almost a vulgar red. He was beautiful, the way the devil might have been, just before he fell. She was sure he'd looked through one of his cameras as Gabriel had, that he'd overheard what she'd whispered to the girl in the basement and seen her kill yet another vampire. Her heart pounded.
What have you done?
He demanded, sweeping his arm toward the body. He wasn't looking at Tana, though, but rather at Gabriel. His voice was scolding in the manner of someone who discovered their dog chewing up the carpet.
What exactly happened here?
Oh, hello, said Gabriel. Don't be angry. So she got hungry and killed someone. The city is full of humans desperate to be turned. Just choose another.
Tana was horrified by how callous he sounded, even in her defense. Lucian shook his head.
Don't be ridiculous. She didn't kill him. You did.
A wide grin stretched across Gabriel's face, making his fangs gleam.
You're right. I killed him, and then I tried to pin it on her because I thought it would be funny. And it was funny, wasn't it?
Cages and cages full of humans, and you kill a vampire, Lucian said, clearly exasperated. I guess that's what you're used to, but it seems cruel to feed the girl cold blood.
He turned toward Tana.
Come with me, my dear. First, let's get you cleaned up, and then I think we should talk.
He looked back at Gabriel.
You don't mind, do you?
Gabriel was no longer smiling.
If the enemy of my enemy is my friend, then surely you should be friend to my friend.
Which didn't make sense. Not even the odd sense that he usually made, where the words came together like a riddle or a puzzle. Tana frowned. No, this was off. As though he was play-acting some exaggerated version of himself.
He wasn't always like that.
Lucian rolled his eyes and extended his arm to her. It was a courtly gesture, as though she was used to Gabriel making it. And it reminded her that they'd been friends once, and maybe, despite everything Lucian had done, they'd be friends again. She thought of Elizabeth and of Lance's party, and how all those deaths were Lucian's doing. She put her hand on his arm, smearing sticky, half-dried blood on his shirt sleeve with great satisfaction. He curled his lip as they went up the stairs together.
You're awake early,
Tana said, pointing up at the glass ceiling of the ballroom. The blue sky was turned ashen by the tinted windows, but the glow of the sun was bright enough to make her flinch. She wondered how Lucian stood it.